Kale and Company weekday mornings, 6 till 10.
Yeah, I'm not going to say I'm a hammer, but I'm, you know, maybe a nail. I don't know. Rhymes with kale. We'll figure it out. We've got a couple of days to play with.
Beat the nail.
Beat the nail. Hammer the nail. Nail kale. I don't know.
Oh, it's amazing.
We'll figure it out. Jimmy Kelly might make some imaging. He was asking me about it this morning. But yeah. All right, let's get to the news. Round number one at 6:05, the great Dawn Stensland.
And good morning, Kale and Company News Live this Tuesday, as Greg says it, Tuesday morning. We are here February 4th, sponsored by Kitchen Magic this morning in the 40s. Another warm day in store for you. So we got that going for us, which is nice. In the news, so much happening. We now know that the number of people known to be injured in the Northeast Philadelphia plane crash has now risen to 24. That confirmation from city officials, as well as Mayor Sherelle Parker, who spoke out once again yesterday. She confirmed that of those people, 4 remain hospitalized and 2 of them are in very critical condition. So the number of fatalities, as we've been reporting, related to the crash remains at 7. The 6 people who were on board that MedJet plane and then the 1 person on the ground. We know that Mayor Sherelle Parker has announced that she is requesting state and federal help with this recovery effort and says those talks have begun, actually began immediately after the crash. So we'll see where that goes. And she noted the city is working with the forensics department, other partners, as this probe continues. We now have it nailed down as far as the community meeting. That'll be Wednesday evening. NTSB still investigating, and I updated you on that all day yesterday. As far as the black boxes, they're completing that investigation. So we're following that one for you. We also had a shootout between 2 different groups in North Philadelphia, happened last night, injuring a man and 2 teenage delivery driver workers. So this happened before 8 o'clock. It was like 7:30-ish last night, 2800 block of North Reese Street. And police officers were called 911 calls. They found that a man was shot in the leg. He was rushed to the hospital. He's in stable condition. And they say the man is being held as a prisoner at this time. 2 other women who were working for delivery driving service were also shot in the leg. I guess we also have teenagers injured, but 1 of the women listed in critical condition, the other in stable condition. And so the police are saying they have no official arrests at this point, but at least 3 shooters fired more than 30 gunshots during this gun battle, like the wild, wild west here.
Like me at King Shooters on a Sunday afternoon.
Oh, gosh, it's they believe now this time they're saying a motive that they believe drugs were the motive.
Oh, shocking.
For the shootout.
I mean, I'm willing to bet at least 50% of the stories that you talk about are either gang or drug related. Nice that they could actually throw us a tidbit of information.
Yes.
Yeah.
So we're getting that information, which is a good thing.
Yeah.
We had yesterday was the 2-year commemoration, I'll say, of the East Palestine, Ohio, on the border of Pennsylvania train derailment and that toxic site, as many claim. Vice President J.D. Vance back in Ohio yesterday for that 2nd anniversary of the East Palestine train derailment. This was 2 years ago. Yesterday, 50 cars on that Norfolk Southern freight train derailing in East Palestine. 10 of those cars carrying hazardous materials. And that, of course, led to the evacuation order, people living nearby. And then we started to hear about health, water, air concerns became top of mind for the residents of this village. So I will say that they, under the previous administration, under the Biden administration, even though there were many requests to declare this as some kind of a federal disaster area, that never happened under Biden. And they had, remember, Trump and J.D. Vance had obviously campaigned here last summer.
I would, yeah.
Made a lot of promises.
Yeah, I remember for 2020, after the election, we found out, in light of this story 2 years ago, that East Palestine voted 73% Trump. I'm wondering what those numbers were this time around, 4 years later.
Yeah, so this is Trump country.
Yeah.
We have some of J.D. Yesterday, if you want to roll the film.
In that initial phase, what we were most worried about is the water clean to drink? Is the air safe to breathe? That's what we were really worried about 2 years ago. Now what we're worried about is finishing the cleanup and getting this community back on the path of economic prosperity. And you asked about the Railway Safety Act. I mean, I sponsored the Railway Safety Act because I thought then, and I still think now, that we could do a lot better. We could have smarter regulations that actually empower the railways to experiment with technology that will make their business safer, but most importantly, make these communities safer. And I think that we could do a lot better at ensuring that when you have a terrible train disaster like what happened in East Palestine, the railways actually pick up the tab. And that is one thing. As much as I'm inspired and gratified by the resiliency of this community, I heard a lot about Norfolk Southern making promises to this community that it didn't keep. And you can be damn sure that over the next 6 months, you're going to hear a lot from the Vice President of the United States and the entire administration. If Norfolk Southern doesn't keep these promises, we are going to talk about it and we are going to fight for it.
Mike DeWine, the Republican governor of Ohio, there in the background on the left. Remember when they sent in the EPA?
Oh,
into
yeah.
people's houses, and they were drinking the water, and they're like, this is good. You want to try it? It's safe. I'll never forget that little photo op that they had.
Yeah, yesterday, actually, Dan Borowski had set up, I interviewed the founder of Just Well Law, and so her name's Christina Baer. She's the attorney. They just yesterday filed a major lawsuit, and for the first time, we learned about the fatalities that are being blamed on this, including a one-week-old baby.
Mm.
So even though they've just announced some settlements with the community, the legal entanglements continue here.
It'll go on for years.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's just a really tragic story there. So we have other news of the day. Just wanted to update you on the story of what happened in court yesterday as far as the murder of Ellen Greenberg. City of Philadelphia settled two lawsuits yesterday brought by her parents. She's the 27-year-old teacher, school teacher, local grade school teacher who was stabbed to death. Originally, it was ruled a homicide. Then it was changed to a suicide. Then it was just yesterday now, just over the weekend, the original ME, the coroner there, changed it back to either other or homicide. In any event, before the trial would begin, City of Philadelphia settles these two lawsuits with her grieving parents who have fought since January of 2011, to have justice in the murder of their daughter in Manayunk. So now there will be transparency. Part of the settlement is transparency.
over 20 stab wounds, multiple in the back.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I don't know how anybody stabs themselves in the back to the point where they're able to bleed out and die. That thing is that smelled for 15 years.
It has.
It really has.
There's more to it, and we've talked about it before, but I just wanted to headline that at least there's some closure for these poor parents. A Temple University student is now charged in connection with the alleged impersonation of ICE officers on the North Philadelphia campus. University police responding to Temple's, one of the residence halls there, Johnson and Hardwick, on North Broad Street.
Yeah, know it well.
Familiar to you?
Yes.
As a Temple, a famous Philadelphia Temple alum.
I wouldn't go that far, but I will not reveal any details of what occurred or did not occur at Johnson and Hardwick.
So initially they said the police had reports that two guys were acting as ICE impersonators. A third person was recording them, and they were denied access to this residence hall. Somebody calls police, but they get away. So now 15 minutes later, police find what they believe to be the same guys that are answering to the same description, let's say, as the 15-minute earlier description at the residence hall. And police responded to Insomnia Cookies there on Cecil B. Moore Ave after another report of these suspicious young men claiming to be police as well as ICE agents. And they were wearing black shirts with police on the front and ICE on the back.
Well, I mean, the uniform is pretty simple and basic. I guess you could have it made up at a T-shirt shop.
So here's the kicker, Nick Kale. They did take into custody 22-year-old Aiden Stiegelman. And as well, he had been driving, I don't know if this is his parents' vehicle, whose vehicle this is, but it is a Jaguar SUV.
Okay.
So, to which I would say, if I buy the Piazza Jaguar SUV,
mm-hmm.
not letting, you know what I mean, the teenagers drive the
right,
Jag.
Right. And this, this is a Temple student.
This is a Temple student.
Okay.
So, he's on interim suspension, and the investigation is ongoing. So, nobody is charged in this. I think they're trying to figure out, were these three trying to do some kind of a prank,
mm-hmm.
one's video, what is going on? You cannot impersonate an officer,
right.
though.
Well, they wanted to go viral, Dawn.
It sounds like it, Nick.
Yeah, they wanted lots of likes and comments and retweets.
So, I imagine the Stiegelmans, you get that phone call. It's the dreaded phone call.
Yeah, the Stiegelmans are like, we tried to give you the Jaguar. You know what? If you could afford a Jaguar as a college student at Temple, shouldn't you be going to Villanova or Penn? Or maybe St. Joe's? Just a thought.
These are the questions. Yeah. Nick Cale wants answers.
This is hard-hitting journalism here,
please,
folks.
Please, yes. And, of course, last night, what a great night. First night as we debut Eagles in Norman.
The Eagles!
Taking the questions. It was a lot of fun.
I saw all the reporters down there yucking it up with the athletes. God, what a charade it is. We don't need 2 weeks for this. I wish the Super Bowl was just the week after the championship games.
I think it's fun. I know that, Kelsey was there. They were getting a lot of Taylor Swift questions, but they were asking some, there was one cute interaction with Jalen Hurts, and the one guy was saying that, his girlfriend has a crush on Jalen, and like, what could he do to look better?
I could see a lot of women having a crush on Jalen.
On Jalen.
Yeah.
And Jalen basically said, can't help you with that.
And we get Conklin back in here to do his Jalen Hurts impersonation from Friday. All four words of it.
So, having a lot of fun, but we're very excited for our Eagles and our Phils as well. Because
yes, the caravan went down, right?
Yes.
They loaded up. Did they load up the truck? That used to be an old sports radio exercise. We'd have to guess how many rosin bags and how many cans of bubble gum and things like that are in the truck.
Philly fanatic, he's got his... That vehicle's pretty cool. Like, I like that four-wheeler he's got.
People love the nostalgia of pitchers and catchers in Clearwater, Florida. Get away from this cold and the COVID and everything.
Yes. Yep. Let's go down, shall we?
Yeah.
Kale and Company Caravan?
Yeah, sounds like
Greg's
a plan.
Very quiet,
yeah.
Nick.
Yeah, Stalker's like, we don't have 20 grand for that.
We are sponsored by Kitchen Magic this morning. Just go to kitchenmagic.com. Start your worry-free remodeling journey with a local, trusted, family-owned company that has been transforming kitchens for 45 years. Kitchenmagic.com. Enjoy today's weather because we are nearly 50 degrees today, but with some snow and nasty weather on the way tomorrow and may affect our early morning commute 24 hours from now. Kale and Company News Live.
All right, Dawn, thank you very much. 6:17 Tuesday morning. Let's get to another big take.
The Big Take on Kale and Company.
And it is brought to you by Robert Half. The Big Take: media industry crisis. Donald Trump's victory in November wasn't just a win over Kamala Harris and the Democrat Party, but it was also a resounding knockout of the legacy media. Americans who might have voted for Donald Trump for the first time tuned out the mainstream media, the manufactured noise, and the DNC talking points, and nothing they sold the American public landed. In the aftermath, we've seen CNN hit a 30-year rock bottom in ratings. We just covered the story yesterday in which MSNBC had their lowest-rated January in network history, amassing a paltry 63,000 viewers in their 8 to 11 p.m. primetime window. But flying under the radar and knocked off of the front page over the weekend by Trump and tariffs was a swift, decisive move by newly minted Secretary of Defense Pete Hegseth. The Pentagon throwing a crushing blow to left-wing media. Headline, Pete Hegseth, quote, kicks legacy media out of Pentagon press office, replaces them with New York Post, Breitbart, OAN, and Huffington Post. Pentagon rep said, quote, the order is intended to broaden the access to the limited space of the correspondence corridor to outlets that have not previously enjoyed the privilege and journalist value of working from physical office space in the Pentagon, end quote. And I think we are just getting out ahead of this story, and I believe so, because just wait until Pete's next media availability. He was just at the border yesterday with Secretary Kristi Noem. I think the remaining legacy media will still be able to gather, and they will undoubtedly say that this is an attempt at state-run media and right-wing propaganda. I think you can take that to the bank. Here are some further details. The New York Times, NBC News, NPR, and Politico are amongst the outlets that have been ordered to vacate their spaces by Valentine's Day. Quote, this is part of Pete's plan to implement a rotating schedule for outlets to use office space. Each rotation will last 1 year and will include one outlet from print, television, online, and radio to be filtered to allow a new outlet from the same medium that has not had the unique opportunity to report as a resident member of the Pentagon Press Corps. Of course, the New York Times, immediately peddling panic and fear, writing the following, quote, "This is a concerning development. They have expelled independent, fact-based news outlets," end quote. Now, that's funny, fact-based. This isn't state-run media. This isn't controlling the narrative. This is merely leveling the playing field. Okay, so no more New York Times, no more NPR. Update on that story coming up shortly. Politico or NBC News. But you still have the Washington Post, ABC News, CBS News, Axios, and other dying media publications and platforms. But the reality is Americans are rejecting the legacy media like we've never seen before in our nation's history. 61% of Americans polled by Gallup don't trust the mainstream media anymore. And after the last 4 years, how could you? The alternative forms of media and even the so-called conspiracy theorists are hitting at a far better rate than the fake news. The Washington Times with this headline, quote, "New media's rise marks legacy news outlets' fall." They write, "When White House Press Secretary Caroline Leavitt announced last week that the briefing room is now open to reporters for, quote, new media, including podcasters and websites, she was acknowledging the power and reach of these outlets, which was demonstrated in the election when President Trump made himself available to those outlets that were ignored by the Kamala Harris campaign." They go on to write further. Chuck Todd has been with NBC News for 18 years and is resigning. The former host of Meet the Press once said he would never have a guest on the program who didn't believe in climate change. The liberal Washington Post has laid off 100 employees, and 25,000 subscribers have canceled their subscriptions, outraged that the paper declined to endorse Ms. Harris. The Post continues to lose money, end quote. And speaking of Chuck Todd, this past weekend, another big story was that Chuck Todd has left NBC News after 18 years. Entertainment Weekly wrote, he is, quote, dissatisfied with the industry. Todd said the media has a lot of work to do. It's a bottom line here. We can't stick our heads in the sand, and we can't be propagandists, end quote. Here was Chuck Todd ranting and raving about Elon Musk being un-American and claiming that Musk himself has destroyed the media ecosphere. Listen and watch this.
And if democracy is a quote-unquote left-wing ideology to Elon Musk, I mean, this man is un-American as far as my definition of America is. And I'm the fact that more people aren't offended by this man's actions. I mean, shows you how much he has helped successfully destroy the trusted information ecosystem, because this is a five-alarm fire. Elon Musk is a five-alarm fire, and the country doesn't realize it.
So let me get this straight. Chuck Todd says, quote, it shows you how much he has helped successfully destroy the trusted information ecosystem because this is a five-alarm fire. Chuck Todd, who stole millions over his career, offering nothing and has no market for his services and could never generate that kind of salary if he was working as an independent broadcaster, sounds like a completely defeated man who is bitter that Elon Musk and X, as well as the new wave of talk radio, social media, and podcasts, ended the stranglehold and the monopoly of information that legacy media held over the American public for decades. They can't handle that. And fittingly enough, he's on a podcast talking about how podcasts ripped away the power of outlets like NBC News. And while we're on the subject of state-run media and taxpayer-funded propaganda, let's circle back to our story with Trump and the FCC versus NPR and PBS. Marjorie Taylor Greene, never one to miss an opportunity to get her name in the headlines, said the following yesterday, quote, "My subcommittee issued a letter on Monday and called for the heads of both NPR and PBS to testify before the House Oversight Committee over what the GOP-led body claimed is, quote, blatantly ideological and partisan coverage. The subcommittee on delivering on government efficiency is planning a hearing on federally funded radio and television, including its systematically biased content. The subcommittee is concerned by PBS's blatantly ideological and partisan coverage and looks forward to your participation in our upcoming hearing." You all know I have a love-hate relationship with MTG, but I'm with her on this one. Let's go. Jim Vandehei is the founder of both Axios and Politico. He wrote the following on Sunday, quote, "For the first time in our lifetimes, I would argue that the media ecosystem favors the right more than the left. He told Mediaite editor-in-chief Aidan McLaughlin on this week's episode of Press Club, the MAGA movement, podcasts, X, talk radio, and other outlets, and now how people consume information, favors the Republican Party, and it really favors Donald Trump. He has everything working for him to stretch the boundaries of what we're used to in the power of the presidency and the power of media. And I think Jim is absolutely correct. Now, that being said, the raw numbers as far as media outlets in total still favors the left, but the impact is more palpable on the right. And why is the left, the Democrats, and the legacy media lost the power wars of information? Because they are all completely detached from the common person. Case in point, Margaret Brennan from CBS and Face the Nation on Sunday. Here's her conversation with Florida Republican Brian Mast as they were sparring with each other on Sunday morning over Doge. Listen and watch.
Can I follow up on what you just said there? You want to authorize purging of State Department personnel? What does that mean exactly?
Well, if you want to take a look at the State Department, where DEI has been a priority over, let's say, diplomacy in many accounts, I could give you hundreds of examples
what
of where they were authorizing.
What proof do you have of that?
Sure. Let's list them off. $500,000 to expand atheism in Nepal, $50,000 to do, a transgender opera in Colombia, $47,000 to do an LGBTQ trans comic book in Peru, $20,000 a pop to do drag shows in Ecuador. Shall I continue with more examples of where DEI was the priority?
It certainly seems like there could be a review of things. Foreign aid, as you know, is less than 1% of the entire federal budget. So we're talking small amounts of money by comparison.
Doesn't matter if it's small in comparison or not. Thousands of dollars for trans comic books in Peru? That's where our tax dollars are going? More of these dollar sums coming up in the cut sheet at 7:45. But Margaret Brennan, she can keep interrupting. She can keep defending the DNC talking points, and she can keep on losing. Because none of them, obviously, have learned a thing. And the double down, heck, the triple downs, are just fabulous to witness and watch. But lastly, talk about good timing. Super Bowl 59 is this Sunday, and Fox has the broadcast, which means that a Fox host will interview the 47th president of the United States. News coming down over the weekend that Fox News host Brett Baer will interview Donald Trump in a pre-taped interview from Mar-a-Lago that will air during Fox's pregame show of Super Bowl 59. It's another W for Trump and Fox, although I will say this, I can't wait for the next couple of years when the big game returns to CBS and NBC. That should be must-see with Donald Trump. Now, some believe that the media is the most powerful entity in the entire world. And at this very moment, it's the right dictating the terms, not the left. And that is causing the left to claim chaos. Although, the only chaos is behind their closed doors as their echo chamber rings hollow these days. And that's the big take.
The Big Take on Kale and Company.
Brought to you by Robert Half. 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring, and Robert Half is here to help. Their recruiting professionals utilize an award-winning AI to connect businesses with highly skilled talent. At Robert Half, they know talent. Visit roberthalf.com/talent today. 855-839-1210 if you want to jump in on the phones, social media, at 1210WPHT, and of course, the YouTube chat. We'll come back, get thoughts and reactions to that, as well as the tariffs and the updates yesterday from both Canada and Mexico. It's Kale and Company on a Tuesday morning.
This is the Kale and Company podcast from Talk Radio 1210 WPHD and on the free Odyssey app.
Interesting story with CNBC with Trump and TikTok. And then also Fox News with a story that I've been sitting on for a couple of days about TikTok and Trump with election content suppression as far as social media and free speech, so to speak. But it's not from 2024. It's from 2020. We'll get to that in a moment. Your thoughts on what Pete Hegseth did. We'll call it the Hegseth media change-up. And then also Chuck Todd's meltdown that Elon Musk has destroyed the media because he purchased one of 45,000 social media platforms.
Yeah, I think, you know, I could talk about this for hours, so I could, you know, I won't bore you. But I will say this, that the first time when Trump won, part of the reason I believe he won in 2016 was because the mainstream media and all of the progressives and all of the swamp did not really think he was going to win. And so it was a surprise to them. Now this time around, I also feel once again that my bottom line point to all of what I'm saying is a Republican can win when it's a surprise attack. In other words, so this time around, what they didn't see coming, much like 2016, was the influence of the Joe Rogans and all of these podcasters, especially the guys. And so they did not see that coming.
Mm-hmm.
And there were sections of votes that nobody saw coming.
Yeah.
And that's what's concerning to me, is that somebody with an R behind his name, even though he certainly is not a traditional Republican, much like, you know, Reagan was back in the 80s, was somebody I think who a lot of people listening right now, watching on YouTube, you're going to say, you know, I was a Democrat until I voted for Reagan. I'm a Reagan Republican.
Mm-hmm.
Now I think there's going to be a whole new generation who says, well, I was a Trump Republican.
Oh, yes.
Right?
Yeah, MAGA Republican.
And so, but the concerning thing to me is that now they're going to learn. The swamp monsters, they're all looking at this. All of the media moguls, the alternative media, if you will, they're all looking at this, studying this. And what they'll do is they'll pivot. They're very good at pivoting because
mm-hmm.
they all follow each other. They all get it together. And so they will pivot and they'll make sure that there's a lockout on this front.
Yeah. And I have no problem with what Hegseth did, because it's to me more of a balancing of media access. There are still going to be tons of media outlets that are left-wing media publications and, you know, TV networks and websites and newspapers that'll have access to asking their same old tiresome questions. So when you kick out, you know, an NBC, an NPR, and a Politico, and you put it in the New York Post, which kind of hard to believe that the New York Post didn't have more access to somebody at the Pentagon like a Secretary of Defense. And again, this doesn't change the Caroline Leavitt White House press briefing. So I don't think, like, the New York Times, when they're talking about this is a very interesting development as independent, fact-based outlets are being kicked out, which again is really rich, because, you know, the New York Times is, you know, far be it from a fact-based outlet these days with the slants that they've put on everything and how many headlines they've been wrong on. But what I am a little bit concerned about, two stories. So you have this one from CNBC yesterday, where Trump signs the order to create a sovereign wealth fund that he says could buy TikTok. Two key points from this. President Donald Trump signed an executive order that outlines plans for a government-run sovereign wealth fund to serve as an economic development tool and perhaps be used to buy TikTok. Though the idea of such a U.S. fund has been brought up before, they are generally used by smaller countries with vast natural resources as well as fiscal surpluses to deploy. So that comes out. And then this is really the one that is kind of, I think, a little troubling if you're someone that's trying to view things from a consistent lens. So Fox, of all places, reported that TikTok suppressed content that was critical of Donald Trump and the 2020 election controversy. So we're not talking about his victory from 12 weeks ago. Fox News wrote the following: as the Trump administration works to keep TikTok legally available in the United States, the wildly popular app has suppressed content critical of President Donald Trump, according to a new report shared exclusively with Fox News. TikTok maintains that the report reached a false conclusion and that the researchers used terms subjected to additional safety measures because they've been associated with election misinformation or profanity. Now, you might be asking, what exactly was suppressed? Well, this research group that studies the algorithms on hashtags and certain, you know, phrases that are used on social media, like stop the steal, for example. What they realized was, after doing all of their analysis and screen grabs, they showed that in January of 2020, January 24th to be exact, searches for hashtag F Joe Biden returned 37,000 results. A search the same day for F Trump returned none. 3 days later, Fox News, in an independent investigation, replicated the search and found multiple videos and content listed under both. So now we look at the CCP, and here's my big picture takeaway and observation from this is Trump used TikTok tremendously well. Vivek Ramaswamy was begging and pleading, Republicans, please utilize this app. We have to get our message out to Gen Z 18 to 29. Trump comes in with a last-minute rescue of TikTok, 4 years removed from reports that TikTok suppressed anti-Trump content. And I ask you this question, if you are against censorship, how is this any different than Meta, Facebook, or Instagram suppressing anti-Joe Biden stuff in 2020, specifically with Hunter Biden and the laptop story? So this is kind of an interesting little analysis here and study. We have Hegseth, which again, I have no problem with, kicking out legacy media to get fresh blood and to provide a more level playing field. Yet on the other side of this TikTok story, which, by the way, February 6th is coming up, so we will have an update on the future of TikTok in the next couple of days. What is going on here with Trump, TikTok, and perhaps, and I'll throw the word out because it's a word that just popped into my head this morning, do we have collusion here? What's going on?
Well, okay, first of all, as far my bottom line on the Pentagon and Pete Hegseth is that I'm not sure why they focus on NBC, NPR, Political to boot them. I would just say welcome to the party and bring in other groups.
Right. Well, so they're claiming it's a space issue. There's only so much, you know.
Then do it virtual. Put. I mean, that's BS. Put up a, you know, have a second room. You can put up a screen. You can have somebody in a second room. They can ask questions. Like, go outside. Yesterday, Caroline Levitt was outside where Greg and Rich and I took pictures right outside the White House, you know, when we were during our visit. And I don't remember if KJP did that. I apologize, but I don't remember that, you know, she was just there riffing with people, just mm-hmm. taking their questions. And if she didn't know somebody, she said, you know, I don't have the answer, but to Caitlin Collins, asked her a couple of questions. She said, I'll get back to you. I loved the informal sort of friendly. She was very friendly with them and all very cheerful, and she was doing her job. I liked that kind of transparency. So with Pete Hegseth, who's from the media, I don't know how that, I don't know. And he's saying by Valentine's Day.
Correct.
So I don't really understand if that's just sort of a little spanking. He's calling them out. I suspect they'll get back in.
It's a 1 year rotation, according to the White House press corps. And the Pentagon. So, I mean, again, it's still probably 55-45 left-wing versus alternative media, but I thought that was interesting. And then on this CNBC story about Trump signing an order to create this sovereign wealth fund to buy TikTok, this is the interesting excerpt from this article. A discussed deal in which the U.S. would become, and maybe it's CNBC's wording that's going to throw everybody off, but the U.S. would become a partner in social media platform TikTok, which one would be able to potentially use. The app, which was taken offline briefly amid security concerns, but Trump, as we know, signed that order. A government being a partner with a social media platform?
Okay.
That's a little scary, is it? And I'm not trying to drum up fear, but that's, I mean, unless I'm interpreting this the wrong way.
The times that I've heard about sovereign wealth funds, some states have this, especially states that are rich in like natural resources, and they have a ton of money that they, it's like a wealth fund. It's state run.
Yeah.
It's basically like their own investment fund, and they run that. What's interesting to me, and the first time I heard, so two times when Doug Berg, remember he was here in Chester County at that great Trump Force 47 meeting, and he talked about this. This was Burgum was having, then remember when Trump, he addressed when he was on the campaign trail, and it was a whole financial meeting, but something he said sort of derailed it, and all the headlines went to that instead of this. Trump has been talking about this and thinking about this for a while. And so this is interesting to me that we would, it's, you can look at the state-run investment funds, which are very successful. Now this would be, I think, what they're saying, a national situation. I'm curious to learn more about it, but basically you would have a, I don't know, like, is it a slush fund? How do you, they say it would be fully transparent. It would be investment funds, stocks, bonds, real estate, precious metals.
We can have Trump answer that question because he signed an executive order on it yesterday and he was asked about it. We can play that on the other side.
All right, let's do that when we come back. We'll put a bow on that conversation and then we will get to the tariff as Mexico bends the knee, Trudeau bends the knee, and according to reports, conversations underway with Xi Jinping. But right now, a word from our friends at the Piazza Auto Group, and we are stepping it up today because we're talking about Mercedes-Benz. Oh, yeah, the extensive selection at Mercedes-Benz of Westchester, Wilmington, and Atlantic City combines luxury with performance across the full line of sedans, SUVs, coupes, roadsters, and more. We were out there at the Wilmington Pike location in Westchester in December before Christmas. Massive grand reopening after their renovation. What a facility. What a lineup. What a staff. I was looking at the C-Class myself. Far more affordable than you could ever imagine. How's $419 a month for a Mercedes-Benz sound? Yeah, you didn't think that was realistic, did you? Well, the Piazza Auto Group, they make it happen. From the powerful engine of the 2025 C-Class sedan to the impressive towing capacity of the 2025 GLE SUV, you'll find a luxury vehicle that meets your needs. You can schedule a test drive behind the wheel of your dream Mercedes-Benz or shop Mercedes-Benz of Westchester, Wilmington, and Atlantic City at PiazzaPremiumAutos.com.
It's Kale and Company on demand from Talk Radio 1210 WPHT and the free Odyssey app.
The stories that are out there with Trump and TikTok, and I believe Stalker said that he has a clip here of
so DJT. Yesterday, Trump signed an executive order that basically created this sovereign wealth fund. And Howard Lutnick was there with him to kind of explain what this whole thing meant. I'll play a little bit. It's kind of in the weeds.
Yeah.
You two can kind of sum it up, but roll it, Phil.
This is an executive order. This charges your Secretary of the Treasury, Scott Bessent, and your Secretary of Commerce, Howard Lutnick, to begin a process that will hopefully result in the creation of an American sovereign wealth fund.
It's a very exciting event. We're going to have a sovereign wealth fund, which we've never had. We have a lot of things that create wealth, and you've seen that over the last 2 weeks. I think we've created more wealth. Other people have created de-wealth, the people, my predecessors. We're creating a lot of wealth. Scott, maybe you'd like to say something about it, and I'd ask also Howard to say something about it.
Yes, sir. There's a very, very exciting. We're going to stand this thing up within the next 12 months. We're going to monetize the asset side of the U.S. balance sheet for the American people. We're going to put the assets to work. And I think it's going to be very exciting. We're going to study best practices that's done around the world. It'll be a combination of liquid assets, assets that we have in this country as we work to bring them out for the American people.
The extraordinary size and scale of the U.S. government and the business it does with companies should create value for American citizens. If we are going to buy 2 billion COVID vaccines, maybe we should have some warrants and some equity in these companies and have that grow for the help of the American people. So bringing all these things together, I think we'll create, Scott and I will create an amazing sovereign wealth fund for you, sir.
All right, so we can actually stop it right there because I think what's happening here is you have two very bright people financially. You have Scott Bessent and Howard Lutnick. And what this feels like to me is a revenue-generating operation over the next 12 months, which, again, if you talk about having the assets that were necessary and tying this into the story out there with TikTok, because ultimately I think this is the vehicle to possibly perhaps purchasing TikTok from ByteDance. Remember, Elon Musk said some of the investors, and he took flack for this, didn't have the assets and didn't have the money to make that purchase. Remember, when Elon purchased X, he spent $44 billion on it, and he lost $22 billion. He spent basically twice what it was worth. TikTok is worth far more. So this, to me, feels like a vehicle to get the acquisition of TikTok. My biggest concern with it is all of a sudden the government in bed with a social media company, I just want robust speech. And if this leads to the opposite or less thereof, that's my concern as somebody who values free speech. Although I still understand that TikTok at this point in time is a private company. Now, where free speech restrictions and violations would occur is if the U.S. government is a partner with TikTok. Because much like the Biden administration, you can't be meddling with free speech and pressuring companies to shut down the voices of American citizens. So that's kind of the way I would tie it together. Dawn, I'm not sure if you agree with any of this. A lot of in the weeds with the financial aspects of it. But I was more concerned about the social media aspect and the speech component.
I just think that, and by the way, Lutnick, Howard Lutnick, the Commerce Secretary, a lot of Pennsylvania ties, as you know.
Yeah.
Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent. I thought it was interesting that at one point, Rupert Murdoch, did you hear that, was in the room with them?
Yes. And it was a little awkward, correct?
It was, to me, I was just fascinated by it.
Yeah.
But I will say this, take away the fact that TikTok is a media company. If they're simply saying that this is just another investment, and they're not controlling the investment. See, that's the question. And these wealth funds, if you do the history on them and the deep dive, so these came about and we knew more about them. I mean, they're relatively a newer thing. Maybe I think the first legislation we had was, and I always go by when my kids were born, this was like after David was born. So maybe it was like 17-ish years ago.
Oh, wow.
So they're not... they're not really a long time thing that we've heard about. And that's why I think people are always hesitant, something new. But I think the idea here is alternative and new revenue resources.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you have, guys. You know, these are some of the, you know, best minds in the financial world, in the world.
They're getting very creative on how to fix things
economically.
Because
they don't want to tax us.
Right.
The idea, you know, starting in the 1920s was, hey, Americans, we're going to tax you. We're going to take a chunk out of your paycheck. What they're trying to do is say, we're going to flip that. We're going to take less out of your paycheck. How do we offset that?
Yep.
And part of it is a different way of investment. Of course, you want to have concern about especially foreign investment, right?
Yep.
And that's where the laws were created in around 2007-ish. They started saying, oh, we don't want foreign investments taking over our investments.
Yep.
They have to watch all of this. They have to have proper watchdogs, proper transparency. I think that's more the focus. If you forget TikTok, pretend it's they found a big gold mine and they're going to take that gold mine and say, hey, we're going to make this an American sovereign wealth fund.
Right.
But we're not, you know, that's I think how they're viewing it.
Yep. Lutnick, very smart guy. I gave you a clip of him yesterday in the big take with the tariffs when he was on CNBC, and that CNBC host was like, that's the greatest explanation I've ever heard for tariffs. We'll get to tariffs on the other side because we have updates from Mexico, Canada, China. I've got Trump's Truth Social posts and all of that, as it looks like in a matter of 6 hours, two out of the three have been taken care of. It's hour number two on the way. Dawn will have some news as we continue. Kale and Company on a Tuesday on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
Start your day with Kale and Company. Weekday mornings 6 till 10 on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT and the free Odyssey app.